Welcome back. In his new book, Quarterback, local sports writer John Feinstein writes, quoting here, "There is no position in sports that is more glamorous, more lucrative, more visible, more high risk than being a starting quarterback. Since the role has been the focal point for new viewers and longtime football fans, what can we learn from them and from local quarterbacks, past and present?" Joining us now to discuss this, I described him as a local sports writer. That's because he lives here, but he writes about sports nationally and sometimes all over the world. John Feinstein, good to see you.
Kojo, good to be back. Thanks for having me.
If you have a question or comments for John Feinstein, give us a call, 800-433-8850. Do you think the attention on quarterbacks is misplaced? Make a case for your favorite local quarterback. 800-433-8850. Send us a tweet at Kojo Show or email to Kojo at WAMU from at WAMU.org. The stock in an NFL team seems to rise and fall with the health and performance of their starting quarterbacks. Is all this attention on one player in a team sport valid?
It is, because the quarterback, remember, on every single play on offense, the quarterback touches the ball. And he has to make all sorts of pre-snap decisions. He has to make decisions once the ball is snapped. He has to make all these decisions, usually while there are very large men bearing down on him with intent to hurt. And if you look historically, especially nowadays with the rules that are so geared to the offense, if you don't have a top-flight quarterback, you are unlikely to advance to the playoffs and certainly not likely to advance deep into the playoffs. What Nick Foles did last year, coming in for Carson Wentz after he was injured in Philadelphia, was miraculous. But you have to remember, Foles had been a successful starting quarterback in the NFL before Wentz's injury occurred. So he had the experience to come in with a team that had a great defense and win the Super Bowl. That was the outlier. If you look at the four teams still playing this coming weekend, Drew Brees is going to be in the Hall of Fame.
Mm-hmm.
Tom Brady is going to be in the Hall of Fame. Mm-hmm. Patrick Mahomes and Jared Goff, the two young quarterbacks, may very well be in the Hall of Fame someday. And those are the four teams still playing.
In your latest book, you profile five NFL quarterbacks, three of them essentially local, the Redskins' Alex Smith, the Ravens' Joe Flacco, and now retired Doug Williams of the Washington Redskins. What drew you to those five players in particular?
Well, I can honestly
apart
say,
apart from the fact that they were willing to tolerate you.
Well, and that's the major thing, Kojo, that I need people who are willing to tolerate me, and that's the right word. Because I ask for a lot of time, and I ask a lot of questions that I think aren't normally asked to athletes, because when you're doing books like this, detail is vital, and background and inside information is vital. That's what I've done, I think, in all 40 of my books. So it had nothing, the location was coincidental. Obviously, Alex Smith was playing in Kansas City when I was researching this book last season. I had no idea he would end up in Washington. Joe Flacco, I had known for years because I do have an association with the Ravens dating back to a book I did on their team 14 years ago. And Doug Williams, I asked because I've known Doug, I hate to date myself this way, since he was a rookie in Tampa. And the funny story about that is back then in 1978, an African-American starting quarterback in the NFL was a big deal.
Huge.
It was a news story. And Doug was the first African-American quarterback ever drafted in the first round of the NFL draft. And about 10, 11 games into the season, George Solomon, who was then sports editor of the Post, who you know well, sent me down to Tampa to write a story on Doug Williams. And I went to John McKay's press conference on Monday morning before I went to speak to Doug. And John McKay looked at me and he said, "Who are you?" And I said, "Well, my name's John Feinstein. I work for the Washington Post." He said, "What are you doing here?" "I'm doing a story on Doug Williams." And he looks at me and he says, "You mean to tell me the paper of Woodward and Bernstein's just now figuring out we have a black quarterback?" And when I sat down with Doug, I apologized to him. I said, "I'm sorry you have to answer all these questions again. I'm sure you've been through it a dozen times." He looked at me and said, "John, I've been a black quarterback all my life. It's not a problem." And we became friends then. And I knew from dealing with Doug how bright he is. And I needed an African-American voice in this book. And I think he provided a very eloquent one.
Signing on as a quarterback means a highly unpredictable career path with lousy job security. What lessons on unpredictability does, say, an Alex Smith's career offer?
Wow, that's a great question. If you look at Alex Smith, at the start of his sophomore year at Utah, he was the second-string quarterback. 20 months later, he was the number one pick in the NFL draft. He tells a great story about, I asked him about how when he realized how much his life had changed in that short period. And he said he went to the bank at the end of the team's first two preseason mini camps. NFL players, Coach, will get paid 95% of their money during the regular season. They get small checks for mini camps and exhibition games. And he'd received these two small checks in his locker, one for $700, the other for $1,000. So he went to the bank where he'd opened an account in San Francisco, stood in line, and he's looking at the checks after he filled out the deposit slip, and he realized that one of the checks wasn't for $1,000. It was for $1 million because it was one of his bonus checks from his original signing bonus. And he said he went back, filled out another deposit slip, and then immediately got automatic deposit because he didn't want to go through that again. But his first 6 years in the NFL as a number one draft pick, he was a bust. He was injured. He didn't play well. He was benched for lesser quarterbacks in terms of how they'd come into the league. And only when Jim Harbaugh came to San Francisco and put in an offense that was designed for his speed, Alex Smith was very fast, did he become a star. And then he went to Kansas City and became a star. He lost his job in San Francisco because he got hurt. And that can happen in the NFL. Colin Kaepernick came in, took his place, and took the 49ers to the Super Bowl, which is why I laugh when all these people say, oh, Kaepernick doesn't have a contract because he's not that good. He took a team to the Super Bowl. He's 30 years old, but that's a whole separate issue. And then, of course, Alex came here to Washington after the Chiefs drafted Patrick Mahomes. And in spite of complaints that he didn't have big numbers, last I looked, they were 6-3. Before he had that horrible injury,
yep.
And we don't know if he'll play again, and they ended up finishing 7-9. So 6-3 to 7-9 tells me that Alex Smith was pretty important to what Washington was doing.
John Feinstein's latest book is called Quarterback. Both Washington and Baltimore have had star quarterbacks that did not meet their fans' high expectations. What does it do to a local franchise like the Skins when someone like RG3, Robert Griffin III, got hurt repeatedly, or when Kirk Cousins raises his profile only to be not signed for a long-term contract, or, as you just mentioned, when Alex Smith sustains a terrible injury?
Well, the arc of a franchise changes depending on the health or the success of a quarterback. Before I answer the Washington question, look at Aaron Rodgers in Green Bay. Mm-hmm. In 2017, the Packers started 4-1. They were considered favorites in the NFC to go to the Super Bowl. Aaron Rodgers broke his collarbone, didn't play again until the 16th week of the season. They finished 7-9. Mm-hmm. And that's how important a good quarterback, or in Aaron Rodgers' case, a great quarterback, can be. Robert Griffin III was going to be a Hall of Famer, in my opinion, before he got hurt. He was brilliant as a rookie. He was Rookie of the Year, beat Andrew Luck out for that award, who was the number one pick in the draft. And took Washington to the playoffs, and then got hurt in the playoff game, and was never the same again. Came back too soon. They changed the offense. He wasn't happy with the changes in the offense. He feuded with Mike and Kyle Shanahan, and ended up, of course, being the third string quarterback this year in Baltimore. And Kirk Cousins stepped in and did a very good job. Not a great job, not a superb job, but a good job. Good enough to get them into the playoffs 1 year. Good enough to make them competitive the other 2 years he was the starting quarterback. But Dan Snyder, who you were talking about in the previous segment, maybe the worst owner in sports, wanted a glitzy quarterback. Robert Griffin III was a glitzy quarterback. Kirk Cousins wasn't. He was a competent quarterback. So when they could have signed him to a contract for $45 million guaranteed over 5 seasons, they didn't do it. Even though Scott McLuhan, the general manager, was saying, this is a good deal. He's a young quarterback, Cousins. So instead, they ended up paying him, I always get the numbers wrong, but something like $44 million for the next 2 years. And then he left. And then they had to go out and make the deal for Alex Smith, which I thought, by the way, was a good deal. But now with Alex suffering this terrible injury, who knows what will happen.
Let's talk about Doug Williams. What challenges did he face early in his career, and how did he overcome them to be the first black starting quarterback, to win this? Because when he came here, he wasn't the starter.
Correct.
First black quarterback to win the Super Bowl.
Well, I think you have to go back to when Doug was drafted. Joe Gibbs played a major role in the Tampa Bay Bucks drafting
Didn't know that.
Doug Williams in the first round. He was an assistant to John McKay, and Doug was getting a lot of attention playing at Grambling under the great Eddie Robinson. He was 6'5". He had a cannon arm. So Joe Gibbs was sent to spend 2 days with Doug, not just watching him play football. He sat in, Doug was student teaching. He sat in on Doug's classes and he spent time, had dinner with Doug, got to know him, and urged the Bucks to use their first round pick. They had the 17th pick on drafting him. And on Joe Gibbs's word, John McKay drafted him. And Doug was a starter right from the beginning. He got injured that first season. Again, quarterback, people forget, people say that quarterbacks are overprotected. They're not. They get hurt all the time. Even the seemingly unbreakable Tom Brady missed a year with an ACL injury. And so, but it wasn't just on the field that Doug was challenged. He was living in a southern town. He said he learned not to open any mail that didn't have a return address on it. He got all sorts of hate mail using the N-word, among other things. There was somebody once sent him rotten watermelon in the mail. It was a scary time in the late 1970s to be that visible an African-American figure. He overcame it, made the playoffs 3 times in 5 years. In Tampa.
Matter of fact, we used to say back in those days that the Tampa Bay Buccaneers have one player, Doug Williams. He's the one carrying that team on his back.
And he did. He took him to a conference championship game. Mm-hmm. But at the end of his 5 years, when his first contract was up, Kojo, he was the 54th highest paid quarterback in the NFL. And he was making less than his backup, Jimmy Ray. And when he went in to Hugh Culverhouse to try to get more money, he was basically told, no, you'll take this, or this was before free agency, or you can walk. Well, you know what? He walked. He quit. Walked away, went back to his hometown to teach. He had a young daughter. Yep. His wife had died when their daughter was less than a year old of cancer. So he went home, taught, and then ended up in the USFL, mm-hmm. Which you might remember as the league where Donald Trump was an owner.
Yep.
He didn't do that job very well either. That's my political comment for the day.
There you go.
but then Joe Gibbs called him again. And because Joe was in Washington by then as the head coach, of course, and he said, could you play as a backup? Because Jay Schrader was the starting quarterback after Joe Theismann's terrible injury. And Doug was ready to go back to the NFL, came back, and ended up beating Jay Schrader out for the job in that 87-88 season. And you and I were talking off air mm-hmm. about how he got injured in the first quarter of the yep. Super Bowl, limped off, and came back into the game and threw 4 touchdown passes in the second quarter.
Limping.
Limping. Washington won the game 42-10. Doug was the MVP and was the, as you said, first African-American quarterback to start and win a Super Bowl.
Put on your headphones because there are people who want to speak with you. Let us start with Nick in Falls Church, Virginia. Nick, you're on the air. Go ahead, please.
Hi, Kojo. Thanks for having me.
You're welcome.
This subject is, like, really interesting to me. And I think I wanted to just shift gears a little bit and ask, like, in your experience, what do you think happens when a relatively unknown backup, I don't, you know, Doug, I'm a Bills fan, so Doug Williams is kind of familiar to me. And, you know, you're saying that he beat out Schrader for the backup job. What does that do to, like, a sports team's, like, general collective psyche when, you know, you have maybe an established starter and he, you know, gets beaten out by a backup and he has the reins of the offense now?
Well, that's a good question. And I think a lot of it, though, depends on the circumstances. Doug Williams had been a starting quarterback in the NFL when he came to Washington and had success, as we discussed. So for him to take Jay Schrader's place, I doubt if it shocked very many of the other players on that team. But the bottom line in any sport, with any position, is if you can do the job, your teammates don't care what your background was, whether you were the first pick in the draft or you were Tom Brady and you were the 199th pick in the draft. All they want to know is, can you make the team better? And Doug Williams obviously made the team better when he became the starting quarterback that year. Later on, Mark Rippon beat him out for the job, and Mark Rippon led Washington to a Super Bowl few years later. So I doubt if any of Doug or Mark's teammates minded that Mark became the starter because Mark led them to a Super Bowl.
Thank you for your call. We got an email from Danielle, who self-identifies as the wife of Redskins tight end Jordan Reed. She writes, "Our Redskins quarterback situation needs serious attention. My husband played quarterback all throughout high school and switched to tight end in college. He was drafted as such to the Redskins in 2015. When Alex Smith and Colt McCoy went down, my husband was called to play backup. My jaw dropped." You write that the NFL is actually starved for decent quarterbacks.
Yeah.
What does it take to stand out these days?
Well, I think that a lot of time, one of the things Doug Williams pointed out to me, now Jordan Reed is African-American and is an excellent tight end. I mean, he's a Pro Bowl caliber tight end when he's healthy. One of the things Doug Williams pointed out to me was as much progress as has been made in 40 years since he was a rookie, you don't see a lot of African-American backup quarterbacks in the league. It seems to be a white player's position. Now, it's different with starters because teams need to win. So if you have the first pick in the draft and Cam Newton is there, you take Cam Newton. If you have the first pick in the draft and Jameis Winston is there, you take Jameis Winston. But if there's any question mark, like Russell Wilson's height, he goes in the third round. Or Dak Prescott, could he throw the ball well enough to be a starting quarterback in the NFL? You go in the fourth round. But I think, you know, the last time I can remember, and I don't really remember it because I'm not that old, but in 1965, I believe it's 65, both of the Baltimore Colts quarterbacks, Johnny Unitas, who was pretty good, and also shows how inexact the science of judging quarterbacks is. Johnny Unitas was once cut by the Pittsburgh Steelers and ended up in Baltimore. And Gary Quazzo, his backup, got hurt. And Tom Maddie, who, like Jordan Reed, had been a college quarterback, moved from running back to quarterback, and they almost beat the Baltimore, the Green Bay Packers, Vince Lombardi's Green Bay Packers, in the playoffs. But for a player, and you might remember this one, Kojo, a few years ago in Philadelphia, both Washington quarterbacks got hurt, and Brian Mitchell had to play quarterback the rest of that game. Brian Mitchell was a college quarterback. So it does happen on occasion, but if Washington is at the point where they have to take their Pro Bowl tight end and play him at quarterback, they're probably in a little bit of trouble.
And at the time, Brian was returning punts on kickoff. Right?
He's an all-pro returning punt returner and kickoff returner.
On to Rob in Alexandria. Rob, you're on the air. Go ahead, please.
Yeah, hey, Kojo, thank you for taking my call. Hey, the question I gave the screener, I have to change it because your guest touched on something. So my question is, for a country of 300-plus million people, there are 32 professional football teams. Why is it that there aren't even a good enough number? Why are there so, you know, we're such a huge country, why can't there be more than 32 outstanding quarterbacks, 32 people out of 300 million, so that every NFL team has not only a good starting quarterback, but also a good backup quarterback?
What does that tell us? What does that tell us about the game of football and about the NFL?
Well, what it tells us, and by the way, I don't know that there are 32 outstanding quarterbacks. There may be 10 or 12. What it tells me, again, having studied the subject for 18 months, quarterback's really hard position to play. I mean, there's so much that goes into it because it isn't just having a cannon arm. You know, there was a guy named Jamarcus Russell, you might remember, was the number one pick in the draft. I think it was 12 years ago now, coming out of LSU. He had the strongest arm anybody had ever seen. Has anybody here heard of Jamarcus Russell? No, because you need more than a cannon arm. You need more than speed. Tom Brady ran one of the slowest 40s in the history of the NFL Combine, 5.28. Alex Smith, by contrast, was 4.67, just to give you something to measure it by. And it takes smarts, it takes arm strength, it takes toughness, it takes the ability to take a hit. Because when an NFL quarterback walks off the field after a game, I've stood next to the lockers of these guys while they try to take their uniforms off. And I emphasize the word try. This isn't a quarterback who's injured. This is a quarterback who's played the whole game, and he can barely walk. That's why these Thursday games are so awful, because players can barely get on their feet before Wednesday if they're lucky. But the answer to the question is finding a guy with all the qualities that go into playing quarterback is extraordinarily difficult to do. That's why so much time and money is spent by NFL quarterbacks in seeking that rare franchise QB.
In recent years, the NFL has become a heated political battleground, with President Trump taking on Colin Kaepernick and other players over kneeling during the national anthem. How has our understanding of quarterbacks and how they should or should not perform affected how we feel when they take a stand on issues other than football?
Well, as you know, Kojo, there are a lot of people in this country, most of them supporters of Donald Trump, who think athletes should just keep their mouths shut. What was it Laura Ingraham said about LeBron James? Just shut up and dribble. I mean, all he's done is build a school for inner city kids in Akron. So I suppose he should just shut up and dribble and not do things like that. People don't want to hear from athletes unless they're saying things or doing things that they are comfortable with.
Especially high-profile ones like LeBron James or Colin Kaepernick.
Exactly. And what I hear all the time is, they're making millions of dollars. What have they got to complain about? Well, how much money they're making is irrelevant to how they feel about social issues. Colin Kaepernick saw what he saw as injustice and decided to stand up for that injustice by sitting down or by kneeling eventually. And I always stand up for the national anthem. My father was an Army veteran. He fought overseas in World War II. I respect the flag, so I stand up for the national anthem. But if somebody next to me doesn't stand up or doesn't kneel, and I know a lot of guys who've been in the military because I did the book on the Army-Navy football rivalry years ago, and they all say the same thing to me. I'm close to many of them still. And what they say is, one of the reasons we go overseas to fight, if necessary, one of the reasons we volunteer to defend our country is so that that guy next to you can kneel if he or she chooses to, and that they have the right to do that. Doesn't mean you agree with them or disagree with them. It means we understand they have the right to do that.
Just about out of time. John Feinstein is the author of Quarterback and many other books on sports. No local teams to root for, but what will you be watching? Who will you be watching for during the weekend's conference championship?
Well, as I said, there are four great quarterbacks. Two of them young, two of them old. Drew Brees and Tom Brady are both over 40. So I tend to root for the old guys because I'm an old guy. But I would expect we're going to see a lot of offense in these games because of the quality of the quarterbacks. Patrick Mahomes has had an extraordinary year. And by the way, one of the things I touch on in the book is how Alex Smith tutored Patrick Mahomes, even though he knew Patrick Mahomes was going to take his job. Says a lot about Alex Smith.
Our conversation with John Feinstein and our update on the recent search for a new stadium site was produced by Ruth Tam. Our check-in on the Women's March was produced by Inge-Lisa Schroepsdorf. Tomorrow we'll sit down with D.C. Mayor Muriel Bowser. And later this month we'll discuss the rise of temporary labor and the gig economy in the Washington region. If you're someone who's working without benefits and job security, head to kojoshow.org/blog and take our anonymous survey. John Feinstein, always a pleasure.
Thanks for having me, Kojo.
And thank you for listening. I'm Kojo Nand.
The Kojo Namdi Show is produced by Ruth Tam, Mark Gunnery, Julie Deppenbrock, and Margaret Barthel. Our managing producer is Inge-Lisa Schroepsdorf, and our senior producer is Mana Kashvi. Our intern is Sydney Grannon, and our engineer is Josephine Neonai. For past shows and more content, visit kojoshow.org.
WAMU 88.5 is your listener-supported NPR news station in the greater Washington, D.C. region. You can support the Kojo Namdi Show and all the regional coverage you value by becoming a member today. Click the donate button at WAMU.org, and thanks.